From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Deborah, and you are listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie. And this show is a Dream Vision 7 radio broadcast here at 1510 AM NBC Sports Radio Boston. And you can also hear Bernie's show Wednesday through Friday, 12 noon and 12 a.m. Eastern Time, right on our own station, which is Dream Visions, all one word with a S on the end, the number 7radio.com. And you can also see the schedules there for other affiliate times Bernie's show is heard. It's heard at least 18 times a month. So there you go. We have a great show for you today. And good day, Bernie.
Good day.
And I'm curious to, or not curious so much as we would, I want to hear more about repairing the world and yeah. Also your story about the painter. That was quite fascinating how he opened up to you and told the truth.
Yeah. I'm laughing because as I've multiple times I've said I'm a multiple personality and not normal. I was just laughing. I was being interviewed by somebody the other day, and he said, it's time to wrap things up. I said, I'd like a turkey wrap. And, and he started laughing because people don't know what to do with you when you, act that way. But one of the things that struck me, I don't know what I was reading, but it had to do with the Jewish New Year and the message that we are here to repair the world. And I thought that's really, when you think about it, if you were the creator, you'd like somebody, created to keep repairing when things go wrong. And, if we all thought of it in that way, what a difference it would make. And I have to say, I think just from the way I grew up, it's always been a part of my way of behaving, from rescuing earthworms who are on the road to just doing things to help heal and make the world better. And I was thinking when I get to heaven and I say, did you do anything? I said, I saved a lot of worms. And, I hope they'll say, all right, come on in. But, that you've saved lives. And one of the things that was happening, we live on a circle that's at the end of a road. It's a dead end. So you come up this road, and then there's this circle. And you have to, if you're going to leave, you have to go back down that road. But so I often walk our pets around the circle. It's almost like family, all the people living there. And I noticed that one of our neighbors, her husband has died, she's a senior, and the door to her mailbox had broken, so it was always open. And I kept thinking, I'll have to take that and fix it. But I kept forgetting, and I kept walking the dogs, and I forgot. But one morning, I finally said, okay, stop and take care of it. So I clipped off the broken, screws and bolts there that had probably rusted away over the years, took the door home, got them out, put in some new little metal strips, went back and hooked it all up again. And I didn't leave a note. I didn't say I fixed it or who did it or what. I just thought, they'll come home and or go to the mailbox and look and say, oh, it's been fixed. How nice. I mean, I just felt good doing it. I didn't
right.
need a thank you. And I have to say, I keep learning from my own actions. And I was really impressed that I felt good having done something for someone else. And I didn't need a thank you. And I got more kick out of their wondering who did it.
Right, exactly.
You know, yeah, I mean, many weeks later.
And the joy comes to you. The joy is yours.
Right. And it was such a simple way of making yourself feel good that you've done something for someone else today. You've helped someone else. They're going to have a better life and a better day. And it was many weeks later, I may tell you, that I met her. Her daughter was taking her out for a drive, and they always stop and talk to me. And I mentioned that I had repaired it, and they were, you know, all, oh, their eyes are open, and, you know, it was fun to talk. Since then, they've gotten a new mailbox. I told them I didn't feel bad about it. You know what I mean? That, oh, you went and fixed it, and then we bought a new mailbox anyway. But, you see, I'm laughing at that. I mean, it's just okay, you know, but it's fun and things to talk about. And I'd say for everyone, do something for someone, and especially if you do it without their knowing. I mean, that you can observe and enjoy, and at the same time, they have something of interest that happened in their life. You know, who did that? Why did they do it? But I mention at the end of a paragraph discussing this story, what if we all chose to do this? And I mean, when I say all, I mean from presidents and, you know, prime ministers and whatevers who are running countries, if they all said, how can we help our neighbors? How can we help them repair their world and their life? I mean, think of what's going on in Israel and Gaza. I mean, what if they all got together and said, look, let's stop all this.
Mm.
Let's help each other. We'll send people to help you rebuild, and you can then come and help us rebuild. Let us repair, you know, and live the message. But it's sad when our feeling is we have to defend ourselves.
Right.
Because, again, this comes, you know, out of religions, too, where there have been wars and, you know, defending your religion, your temples and things of this sort from others.
Right.
I mean, I was just reading, I don't know, I think it was in USA Today, I don't know what article I was reading, but it said when the Jews arrived in New Amsterdam, which is what New York was called, Peter Stuyvesant, the mayor, I guess, of New York or governor or whatever, wouldn't let them off the ship, you know, and people had to come and say, please let them off, let them come, you know, so they were able to come, but with no rights. You can't vote, you can't this, you can't that, but at least they, you know, didn't have to stay on the ship and get returned. And I think what a difference that makes. And also, all these thoughts keep popping in my head. That's why I never stop talking. I mean, all these stories. But, and, you know, the song Amazing Grace?
Yes.
I keep forgetting the name of the man who wrote it. But he was sailing across the Atlantic with slaves. He was the captain of a slave ship. And they ran into a storm, which threatened all their lives. And so he prayed to God. God, if you stop the storm, if we're all, you know, we're all safe again, I will turn around and go back and return the slaves and no longer do this. And the storm stops. He turns the boat around, sails back, and ends up writing that song later in his life, Amazing Grace, and becoming a minister. But I think that, you know, we shouldn't have to run into a storm to say, this is not something that I ought to do. You know, is this life-enhancing? Because I've, you know, talked about years ago, I was talking to some group about how my grandfather came here to save his life out of Russia because the Cossacks were riding around killing people with their swords and sabers. And, you know, I was saying how wonderful it was that he could come here. And then somebody in the audience said, yeah, but my relative was brought here as a slave. And that really gave me a different perspective, you know, in the sense of helping me to understand people. I mean, it can be a gift to come here and save your life. And, you can be brought here and be a slave and be punished by it. So, you know, people have to stop and think and understand what we're all experiencing. But I think when we're all here to make repairs and help each other, then that's also survival behavior. Because we know that volunteers live longer, healthier lives. And often the volunteers are people with the same problems you have.
Exactly.
But they are helping everyone else
Look at the storm, the Sandy storm, where the firemen and the policemen had lost their homes, and yet they're helping those that have lost. So, yes, it's a time, Bernie, as you know. It feels like there's that new paradigm where people are coming together to help each other regardless of their religious backgrounds or beliefs or color of their skin, and coming together to actually help each other with weather and repairing, like you're saying.
Yeah. To me, what is always the saddest is that it comes after the tragedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The storm, the disease, the whatever. And then we say, oh, we've got to go and help. Why do we have to wait for a disaster?
I know
I'm always talking about this when I'm giving lectures, you know, holding up a black dot and pointing out. For some people, all they focus on is that black dot on a piece of paper. But there's more to our lives than that. But on the other hand, the charcoal under pressure becomes a diamond. I mean, literally.
Right.
And that people can turn curses into blessings. But it would be nice if we were taught how to live our lives and not have to learn from a disaster, so that we can feel gratitude and feel blessed. And not wait for a disaster, you know, to get us to do something or write a book about it or whatever and say, oh, look at all the wonderful things I learned from. People talk about the side effects of cancer. You know, I always say all the side effects are not bad. But it's sad that you still have to see it in that way rather than having what I would call the inner wisdom and power to deal with whatever adverse situation you run into and not have to have the disaster be your teacher. I'd rather have your parents, your teachers, you know, educational teachers, clergy, all these be your guides. And so I like reading all of these things as guidebooks so that I'm not caught up in, what shall I say, you know, guilt, shame, and blame, that you didn't do this on this day, you didn't do that. I try to look at what is this ritual or story about and learn from history and learn from the interpretation of others.
Right.
I like, the idea that we can dialogue and interpret things rather than, you know, this is what God said or this is what, you know, the law says and you're breaking the law, you're going to go to hell. Let's stop and think a minute about this. What's the message in it? I mean, there's a wonderful poem. I mean, it's painful. I'm always rescuing creatures of all kinds. But this is a poem called Rags. And it's about a soldier who, when the war ends, is ready to head home. And he wants to take a dog home with him called Rags, because this dog has saved the lives of many of the men, you know, in the troop that he was in. But he loses track of the dog and figures, well, maybe they, you know, send him home. I don't know. So off he goes without the dog. He gets back to the States where he's a medical student. And he goes back to medical school. And the poem ends with him walking into a laboratory. And there, lying on the table, is a dog cut open, and it's Rags. It's the dog from his army service. And he walks over to him, and the dog licks his hand. And the poem ends with, you know, if there's no place in heaven for this dog, then I'd rather spend my life in hell. You know, then I don't want to go there either. And it's just that the animals also are wonderful teachers. You know, here he is cut open and basically being tortured, and yet he licks his owner's hand. And I've seen that with our pets. You know, as a doctor, there are times I have done operations on them or caring for their wounds, and it amazes me when they turn their head and lick my hand. And I know they're telling me, you're hurting me, you're hurting me. And I stop and I, you know, give them a few minutes to rest. But they don't turn and bite my hand. And it's amazing to me that they'll lick your hand to let you know, because they care about you and don't want to hurt you, and that they're much more forgiving. I don't know if I did ever tell you the story about our dog, Furphy, when he injured a rabbit, grabbed him.
Yes, but tell the listeners.
Because, I mean, just what it taught me about forgiveness. We had a house rabbit that we had rescued it out of the woods and brought it in, and I learned how smart rabbits were, you know, from the internet. And so it became a house pet, living in the house all the time. But we have a pet door out in the front yard, which is fenced in. And in the morning, the rabbit would run out and push the door open and run outside. But I could never get her in at night, and it drove me nuts. But we then adopted another creature, a dog named Furphy. And one day, you know, we're slowly introducing them all to each other, the cats and dogs and rabbit. And we went shopping, and I thought, you didn't close the pet door. But I thought, well, they know each other. I guess they're okay. So I didn't go home to close it. But when I got home, I found that Furphy had grabbed the rabbit, like the way he grabs a stuffed toy, and shaken her. And she was, you know, knocked out. I don't mean unconscious, but she was pooped and had a wound on her head. And so we had to go to the vet and all kinds of things. But about a week later, I went out to bring the rabbit into the house. And I know she doesn't like to, so she runs around the yard and tries to avoid me. And I went out, and she ran, and I look around, and I can't find her. And I don't know where she's hiding. And then I see Furphy lying on the ground. And where is she? Lying by his side, up against him. So I can't see her. And I thought, this is incredible. A week after he injures her, she and he are buddies, and he is doing her a favor and hiding her.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wish I could be as forgiving as she was. It's just amazing to me how they, you know, all became family, and it was okay.
Right. And it's really a natural instinct with them, and
yes,
they can teach us so much about that.
Yeah. You know, that's what I say, when you see all these photographs that are sent around, you know, through emails of, you know, different species, like the tiger raising a goat or the goat raising a tiger. You know, I mean, the mothers just have no problem. That's why I love sometimes an animal planet, you know, and they have cute animals and all these stories. And to watch the mothers accept all these creatures, you know, they got four or five kittens and everybody else joins in when they don't have a mother or a nipple, and mama doesn't have any trouble being there for them. And some of that, you know, is our internal chemistry. It's like the hormones that go up, the oxytocin, serotonin, those are bonding hormones, you know, that rise.
Right.
And again, when we have the relationships and literally petting furry animals, our bonding hormones rise. So they do help us have a different life by being in our lives. And, you know, it's not just the animals. But again, if you're back to repairing the world, you become tied into and linked to everybody else. And you literally become family when those things all happen. But, you know, I keep getting back to, if you're not brought up with love, it's hard to get you to do something for someone else.
But you can learn. You know, I think, I truly believe it's a choice. When whatever childhood that any of us have had, it's a choice to want to change and to, I think from my own experience, you strive to find what love is all about because you may not have felt it.
But the sad part is you may look in the wrong places, like into drugs and alcohol and the whole host of things, in order to basically numb yourself.
Right.
You know, and not have the painful feelings.
Right.
It takes a lot of courage to confront the pain and the woundedness of the past and really choose to let go and move on. I like the word abandon. That has always helped me, that there are things in your past that you can abandon and just let go of. And the other, and if I've told you these stories before, you can stop me because I never remember what, you know, I've told to whom. But it was reading about Buddha, and somebody was insulting him. And Buddha interrupted the man and said to him, "If you gave me a gift that I did not want, what would you do?" And the man said, "I'd take it back." And Buddha said, "Then I refuse what you are giving me. Mm. I'm giving it back to you. You know, you can have the insult."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, wow. You know, that's why I say I learn from all these people and their wisdom. Because he's basically saying to him, "I love you." And then the guy doesn't know what to do with him. But here, you can have it back.
Yes.
And then you can make people stop and think.
Right, that's profound.
I said to a young man who was driving a car behind us in a crowded summer vacation area, and he was literally screaming and cursing about the traffic. And, you know, I said to a policeman at a corner, I said, "Would you please tell that young man to be quiet?" And the cop said to me, "That's not my job," which I thought, you know, it is your job, you know, to help keep people calm and quiet and make it a little easier to survive. But I went over to him with the kids worrying I was going to get shot, our kids in the car, and I said to him, "I love you. I'm sorry your parents don't." Mm-hmm. Now, the latter part is not something I usually say, but it just came out of me so that he would understand what I'm talking to him about.
Sure.
Where it's all coming from. "I love you. I'm sorry your parents don't." And then what, in a sense, surprised me was he made a U-turn and drove away.
Mm.
And I knew what I was saying to him was the truth, and I think he woke up and knew it. And my hope is, because I felt bad, you know, if I hurt his feelings, but then I thought, maybe you gave him the greatest gift he's ever had. Maybe you made him stop and think about his life and himself and his behavior, and that he could then change that. You know,
exactly.
He can't change his parents, but again, he could abandon the past and what they've done to him and their messages and change himself.
Right.
And all, I wish I could meet him again tomorrow and ask him whether it did you any good.
Well, I already know it did. Know that, Bernie, that just those words opened his heart to find a different way. And, you know,
I think the fact that he drove away probably is a sign that it made a difference.
Absolutely.
Instead of staying there and just getting louder, you know.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. Well, we need to take our first break. Thank you for sharing that. And we'll be back in a moment, everyone. Stay with us.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Saturday at 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Join us every first Sunday of the month at 7 p.m. for Heart Living with Dr. Cynthia Bischoff, where you'll discover life wisdom and achieve greater spiritual awareness. Through Cynthia's coaching tips, healing stories, and inspirational interviews, you'll improve your relationships, find greater balance, and achieve inner peace today. Join thousands who've transformed their lives through Heart Living. This program is part of the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Dr. Bernie and his show, Mind Health Matters, that is usually here at 1510 a.m., Dream Vision 7 radio production every first Saturday at 3 p.m., and then you can hear him on our own station Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. For those out there that would like to connect with Bernie, you can go right on his site. It's BernieSiegelMD.com, and Siegel is S-I-E-G-E-L. So it's all one word, no dots, BernieSiegelMD.com. You can connect with him, read his articles, purchase his books if you'd like there, and send him an email right from the site. Now, if you would like to save on purchasing any items of Bernie's, you can go on his son's website, Jane and Keith Siegel, and it's wisdomoftheages.biz, just as it sounds, wisdomoftheages.biz. When you order, place code 27 in the comment box when you check out, and then you'll receive 15% off of all Bernie's items, and you'll receive an email as well confirming that you have received that 15%. So again, it's wisdomoftheages.biz. So let's talk about, Bernie, the lake of the mind. That's a lot of information right to share, so go right ahead.
Well, I mean, there is an awful lot, but water is, well, let me start with this. When Nicodemus is talking to Jesus in the Bible and says, how can I be born again? You know, I don't fit back into my mother's womb, I'm a grown man. Jesus says to him, we are water and spirit. And that really struck me. I mean, why did he use the term water? You know, Adam wasn't made out of water. But I began to realize how literally, how important a part water plays in all our lives. I mean, just think of with global warming. We're having a problem with not enough ice, too much water. I mean, it's the water does provide us with everything that we need, you know, to survive. But when you look at it, it also defies the laws of physics, which again says to me water is basically a miraculous event, so to speak. If you freeze a liquid, it becomes solid, more dense, and sinks. The only liquid that doesn't do that is water. Because ice obviously floats, you know, whether you have an ice cube in a glass or on top of a lake or the ocean. And, you know, it suddenly hit me like, wow, who figured that one out? But it is, and then let me read this from the Tao Te Ching. I mean, just the amazingness of water. Nothing in the world is as soft and yielding as water. Yet for dissolving the hard and inflexible, nothing can surpass it. The soft overcomes the hard. The gentle overcomes the rigid. Everyone knows this is true, but few can put it into practice.
Mm-hmm.
And also water, will go to the lowest spots. They dwell in lowly spots that everyone else scorns, putting others before themselves. They find themselves in the foremost place and come very near to the Tao. Again, my comment was, when in doubt, imitate water. You know, because we talked about repairing. I mean, the few lines I just read you from the Lao Tzu start with the best, like water, benefit all and do not compete. See?
Right.
And so imitate water. And the other was, I mean, I love presenting problems to nature. And And I mean that literally, getting answers back. I mean, this may sound crazy when you say get an answer, but something's irritating you and you go for a walk in the woods and you say, how can I deal with this irritation? And then you see a tree that has grown around barbed wire that was nailed to it. And I thought, wow, thank you. I can just take it in and grow around it. You're having problems. You're making noise. You take a walk and you see a stream. And you realize the rocks that are put in the water get in its way, but the water doesn't make nasty sounds. It makes gurgles, you know, that help you relax, like the ocean or the streams. I always say, if you're on the beach, you don't hear the water say, God damn it, who put that there? You know, the waves break and come flowing in, and it's a rhythm and a beautiful sound. So, again, just become that water. And then I have to read you something. It was almost like I went into a trance state and wrote this. and this is written by me. We are water and spirit. You can look into a mirror. See, that's the other thing, that when your mind is still, it's like the pond that's still, then you see your true reflection. So over and over again, water is a mirror. It's everything we need. We are water and spirit. You can look into a mirror and see your image. Water reflects your image too, but unlike a mirror, you must get close to the water and yourself to see the reflection. And you and the water must be still and untroubled by outside forces. And just as water may exist as liquid, solid, or vapor, you can undergo continual transformation too, depending on your state of consciousness. You can choose to close your heart and become hard and cold as ice, or become sparkling diamonds on the branches of the tree of life, or protect and guard the life which exists beneath the surface. For it is only when we are willing to go beneath the surface into the stillness and depth of our being that we truly find ourselves and create the authentic path our stream should follow. As a stream of water flows over and around stones making beautiful sounds, your bloodstream can flow over obstacles, become as destructive as a tsunami, or choose to vaporize and rise above life's difficulties, ready to fall back when needed as gentle rain, softening the soil of life. One day, every bloodstream will find its way to the endless sea of life, where you will be reborn as white crystals, which descend slowly and gently onto the frozen ground when the world experiences a drought of love, forming a blank canvas upon which the world can now create a work of art.
Wow, that's beautiful, Bernie.
And I mean it. That came from God knows where. I mean, I'm not a poet. I don't worry about things rhyming. But it just, you know, just water, it just flowed out of me. That word flow. And I just wrote that, and I keep thinking that water is a sign, basic one of the signs, that our Creator loves us, you know, to create water and to have it defy the laws of physics in order to, you know, help creation, and then to even see it in that biblical line, to me, all these are what I call no coincidences. You know, they're just all meant to be there as lessons for us and to teach us things.
Right.
So if you really want to know yourself, quiet your mind, and then when you look in the still pond or the mirror, I mean, you'll really see yourself. But when what's going through your head is, you know, what other people think? Am I making enough money? How can I get a house? What can I this? Or, you know, you just go nuts. But when you quiet that mind, and Joseph Campbell even compared still water to meditation and yoga. He said, you know, that it's a symbol, again, of quieting the mind. And that impressed me again with his writings and seeing that same kind of message. So meditate and quiet your mind, and you'll see and hear the truth.
Right. And that's part of our evolution here on Earth, is to get to that place and not be thinking, are we making enough money and all. It's part of the whole spiritual journey.
Yeah, and again, you know, as I said, it's sad that people have to learn through pain and disaster, but to really look at the wisdom of those who have preceded us. And I do, you know, try to keep reading all the things. And I also say to people, read and reread, because I notice as I change and evolve, the same book or lecture gets better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm seeing and hearing things that I didn't notice the first time.
Sure.
Because they weren't part of my consciousness and awareness. So
right.
I have to read and reread and see if new things come jumping off the page at me. And to me, that's a good sign. You know,
right.
Hey, you're more aware and you're learning.
Right. Isn't it fascinating how that happens? You can reread a book or a paragraph, you know, 6 months later and absorb something that you didn't catch early on.
Yeah. And yeah. I literally fold the corners of the page down and mark, you know, the margins, either push my fingernail in to dent the page or with a pencil marks. So I know on that page that line was important to me. And
yeah.
then if I come to a page that I didn't mark and notice something, I'd say, you know, here's a new bit of enlightenment. And we'll note it and, you know, often copy it and keep track of it as a quotation.
Right. Well, we're going to be going for a break in another minute and a half or so, but would you like to, when we come back, share how the water was added to the paint?
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that was,
right.
Yes, that was such an amazing thing that that gentleman opened up to you.
Right.
Yes. So with that said, everyone, if you'd like to talk with Bernie, just simply go on his site. It's BernieSiegelMD.com. And again, you can catch his show most times just by going on DreamVision7Radio.com Wednesday through Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. And hear his shows. So we'll be back in a moment, everyone. Don't go away.
The Massachusetts Soldiers Legacy Fund, MSLF, was founded in 2004 with a simple goal: to provide educational assistance grants to the children of Massachusetts service members who were killed while deployed on operations enduring and Iraqi freedom. With its current resources, the MSLF guarantees a minimum of $40,000, $10,000 per annum, in educational funding to each child of a fallen service member whose home of record at the Department of Defense was Massachusetts. There's no selection process. If an individual is a child of a service member whose service is credited to Massachusetts and whom gave his or her life in Operation Enduring or Iraqi Freedom, that child qualifies for MSLF funds. We're proud to report that we're accomplishing our founding objective thanks to the support of individuals and organizations throughout the United States. To donate, go to mslfund.org.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
So, Bernie, tell us more about your experience with this painter.
Oh, yeah. There was a painter in our house working on the ceiling. And, you know, he was listening to me like I'm on the show with you and all these things that were going on in the house. And so he came over to me and he said, you know, he wanted to confess that he regretted stealing from his clients. And he said he was stealing from me, too, but the way I had treated him and listening to me, it made him realize that what he was doing was a sin. And I said, you know, your work looks fine. I don't understand what you're talking about. Why are you a sinner? Did you steal something? He said, no. What he does is charge full price, but he dilutes the paint so he saves money, uses like half as much as, you know, he charges people for. And he was just pouring out his heart to me and God. And, you know, he said he's really looking and hoping for divine direction. And this really happened. We were both shocked into silence because we heard a booming voice fill the house. And I felt, it's got to be God talking to us. And what the voice said was, repaint, repaint, and thin no more.
I love that. And you both heard the voice.
Yes, and it changed our lives forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, let me say this, because on my desk in front of me, just sitting here, one is a message from Jung. A secret unrest gnaws at the roots of our being. And another is Leo Rostin. I don't know where, you know, I just sort of tear these out. I cannot believe that the purpose of life is to be happy. I think the purpose of life is to be useful, to be responsible, to be compassionate. It is above all to matter, to count, to stand for something, to have made some difference that you lived at all. You know, it's what we started with, the repair. And a young man who ultimately died of AIDS said, what's evil isn't the disease, but to not respond with compassion to the person with the disease. And then sitting here, it's something that helped me one day, because I get a lot of things in the morning, you know, from different philosophies, religions, you know, like word for of the day kind of thing that to help you think and focus. And it talked about these four things: regret, cessation, confession, and resolution. And what they were saying is that if you do something that hurts someone else, you know, like the painter, you can regret it and be sorry for what you did. And then cessation, you stop. You see, repaint, repaint, and then no more. You stop doing it. You also confess, as he did to me, to the people you may have hurt or, in a sense, sinned against, and let them know that you did it and that you're sorry. And then the resolution is you resolve to not do this again. And that's the important message. Regret, cessation, confession, and resolution.
And as you mentioned earlier, part of that is getting quiet, quieting your mind to find out why, where this is coming from. Why is that behavior something that you're doing?
Yeah, that you're doing damage instead of repairing. Because when you do those steps, you're repairing things. And I find that when people know I care, then they forgive me, too, when I come and say, I'm sorry that this happened. They realize that I'm trying to learn from my mistakes, and therefore it's easier for them to forgive me and to continue our relationship and move on with it. You know, I always say the best people are the people who are criticized by their families, the people they work with, and the people they work for. Because it really doesn't matter what your profession is. I mean, you can work on my house, and I don't make up these stories, you know, and when you're done, water's pouring in when it rains. And when I called the fellow who worked, he said, your house is a problem. Now, what the hell has he learned? Nothing. My house is a problem? I said, it wasn't a problem before you got here, you know. It was after he worked that the water came in. And so I say to him, don't come back. Because he's not learning from his mistake. He's blaming me and my house. But if he had said, as other, another roofer that was working on my house, I said, you know, there's water still leaking in. He said, let me come over and see what I missed. Fine, come on over.
Sure.
So he'll learn and I'll learn from, you know, the mistake, so to speak, or what we missed. And when people are willing to say, let me see what I missed, or I'm sorry. Yeah, I can remember making, you might say, a diagnostic error. And these are the things that always stay with me and you might say bother me. That as a surgeon, all the people who did well, I don't go to bed thinking about them, but I think about the ones who had complications, where you injure a nerve, you know, that supplies the facial muscles, and a child smiles, and their face only goes to one side. Or another child had an intestinal obstruction problem, and I didn't remedy the problem. I made a mistake in where I hooked up the intestine and so forth. And, yeah, when I learned that I had made a mistake in judgment, I went to the parents and apologized to them and said, I'm sorry, you know, that because I couldn't go on if I didn't do that.
Right.
To let them know. And, you know, they don't end up suing me and getting, they forgave me because they could see the pain I was in. And I didn't do it to be forgiven. It's like repairing the mailbox. I mean, it was something I had to do. It was within me, you know, what's on my mind matters.
Right.
And one other that had a nice resolution. I had operated on a boy, and the scars in the incision area were just very thick. And, I mean, I don't know why, but they were ugly looking. And I felt like he did a terrible job. Several years later, he came into the office, and he said he had been in an accident and was injured and had to have some stitches, and this was out of town, so he knew me, and he came to me to take his stitches out. And when he took his shirt off and I could see the wounds, he said, oh, by the way, I'm a keloid former. Now, what that means is that he, due to his genes, he forms very thick scars, you see?
Oh.
And it was like I had just had therapy from him. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
He was never blaming me as a kid. I mean, he wasn't.
Right.
But suddenly I realized you weren't a terrible surgeon. It's his body that was doing that.
Right, and by sharing with you, yeah. It was his gift to you.
Yeah, and it's, you know, again, we talked about forgiveness, when you can forgive yourself and apologize to others, you know, confess and resolve to be better at what you're doing and say you're sorry, then you're more likely to be forgiven by others. But in the same sense that I found just that word forgive, I really feel that when you can forgive yourself and others, you give yourself a gift. But when you say, oh, it's hard to forget what happened, you're not going to get anything trying to forget. Yeah, that's where you may go have a drink, take a drug, do something. But it has to be, forgiveness to me is at a deeper level, you know, really more like coming from your soul that
right.
you can forgive.
And when you speak the truth like that, you're able to move that through you instead of holding on to it.
Sense of humor. I was thinking of it in a serious way, you know, when you hear your sins are forgiven. But Mel Brooks, who I wrote to because of this and became a friend of mine, he went to visit Joseph Heller. Joseph Heller had what is called Guillain-Barré disease. He's paralyzed, lying right. in bed. Mel Brooks goes to visit him at the hospital. And this was in Heller's book. He wrote about his experience. And as I'm reading the book, in comes Mel Brooks and says, in the name of Jesus, rise and walk. And Heller said, it didn't work. And Brooks said, it was worth a try.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I got to write to Mel Brooks. So I wrote to him. I said, you did the wrong thing. You don't go in and say, rise and walk. That doesn't. You say you go in and you say your sins are forgiven. Then the person is healed and they can walk. And I know Mel Brooks is a decent human being. I mean that because I find an address and write to him in California, and I'm in Connecticut. And what happens?
Right.
I get a letter back from him.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, as I said, there's so many well-known people you write to who never, you don't even know if they ever got your letter. You know, they got all kinds of secretaries and others. But Mel Brooks wrote back, and he said, thanks for straightening out the Jesus talk. He wouldn't let me put this in any of my books, though. He said, thanks for straightening out the Jesus talk. Never again will I forget to say your sins are forgiven before doing my regular mumbo jumbo. And And then the letter goes on, you know, with regards and so forth, and ends with, "Your sins are forgiven, Mel." And, I mean, I don't know, you get a letter like that, it just connects you with another. You know, repair, you smile, you feel good.
Sure.
And just because of those simple letters, we became friends, you know, through that connection.
Mm. Yeah, that one action of reaching out to him, you never know where it may take you. And
yeah. He's got a sense of humor. I often think of Woody Allen, too, because, you know, out of their pain comes the humor, too. Because
right.
Woody Allen, in one dialogue, and I often read this to people, one man is just, you know, the world is dark and black and hopeless, and he goes on, and his friend, when he's done, says, "What are you doing Saturday night?" And he says, "I'm committing suicide." Mm-hmm. And his friend says, "How about Friday night?" And to me, you know, there's a great deal of wisdom in those simple words.
Mm.
You know, that, you know, because my comment is, if you had a good time on Friday night, you would not commit suicide on Saturday.
Right.
So, you know, that they're all speaking from their pain and their difficulties. And then those things, you know, if people read them and really get the message, what a difference. Because I literally know a lot of people who were ready to die and then did what felt good. You know, like they really had a wonderful Friday night.
Right.
And then don't die and change their mind about it. Well, one boy, this is a true story too, he was sexually abused, developed AIDS. Maybe next time we come back, we'll talk about parents. But his parents and their friends abused him. He developed AIDS. I was trying to help him survive as a teenager. He called me to say he was going to commit suicide. And I said we should, you know, basically, I can get a gun, we'll kill your parents. I mean, they're the ones who should die, not you. But he said, "No, I never want to be like them." Boy, that was like a punch in my heart. You know, that, how loving he was. But when he went down to this station to jump in front of a subway train, the train was late, and I loved that. I mean, that's when you feel like you got an angel, you know?
Right.
He's trying to commit suicide, and there's no nothing there to jump in front of. And but on the wall in the station was the suicide hotline prevention, you know, 800, suicide prevention. And he called them, and they came and rescued him. And he said, "I learned about love." And, I mean, it just transformed his life to have somebody come and rescue him and love him.
Yeah, you know? what a special message for the end of the show, Bernie. And we're running late, so we have to go. But
let's remember about parenting for coming back.
Yes, and for everyone. There's so many messages within this hour. So listen again and again. All right, Bernie, till the next time, everyone.
You.
Bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every first Saturday at 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Take a journey to a place of the divine love within with Deborah Beauvais on the Love by Intuition show, Saturdays 2 to 3 p.m., Our message is love in the purest form. The light within us all is a guide to recall our beginning, to learn to love self and humankind, to feel the higher power of our own divinity. To attract love, one needs to be love. Saturday, 2 to 3 p.m., all part of the Dream Vision 7 radio network.